Ashmit Tuesday. This is a big day for us. It'll be in the evening time when Dr. Goodlett, Mark Lane, of prominent fame for writing Rush to Judgment, along with our new friend Dr. Freed, and many other texts, too numerous to mention, inquest, as Dr. Freed did on the Rosenberg trial, well, they're going to be having a press conference with one of the conspirators. Hopefully, he is going to give cooperation and will come forward. Anyway, if he does not, they will step forward with their impressions in a big news conference of Jonestown. Mark Lane, powerful attorney, is participating in this effort and doesn't want a penny for it after hearing so much about it from his good associate, Dr. Freed. So a number of our friends in the press will be gathering this evening, and let us hope that it will turn out well. If it goes well, we will get a link into the conspiracy, because we're going to make a strong effort, which we will not go into today, to unveil one who we know has connections with the Nazi Interpol and Stone and all the ex-members and the CIA and the Treasury Department and the San Francisco and Los Angeles Police. News of the day. President Sadat is stopping over in Paris on his way to Washington, where it is hoped that nuclear war III can be avoided. Most of the Arab nations are overly upset by the conference because it isn't binding, but in the eyes of the Arab League, it's going to necessitate retaliation, because they believe they're being sold out by Washington and Begin of Israel and Sadat of Egypt. They say, and rightfully so, that all Arab nations should be involved. Lebanon, whose territory has been taken away by Israel, as well as Jordan, who had her territory of the West Bank conquered by Israel. World trade grew by 4% last year, but 11% the year before. Peru copper strike looks like it's coming to a finish. Troops have been collecting food for the strikers for 2 months. Even the troops of the Peruvian army backed the copper strikers. They got their demands. The military government could do nothing but to bow to the left trade unions, who are all organized, Trotskyites, socialists, social democrats, and communists of every hue and variety, thus forcing the military dictatorship to meet their demands, because the army of the military dictatorship has been supplying the troops with food, sufficient food, for 2 months, long enough for them to get their demands. Beautiful. Violence in Turkey by the fascist regime, after Carter has lifted the ban on arms. Turkish police shot down 9 students, killed them in cold blood for protesting the fascist state of Turkey. Rhodesia, 10 of 18 survivors who did survive the plane of white Rhodesian people, high-level white families, that were flying over Zimbabwean territory and were shot down by missiles, as the Soviets have now provided Zimbabwean with missiles, because USA had been surprised the world by giving napalm and what the USA jokingly calls its neutron bomb, nigger bomb, to Rhodesia and South Africa. So the Russian air-to-plane missile, any heat, it goes right to it. It struck down the plane, but the plane landed, and 10 survived. As they stepped out, the Patriotic Front charged them with crimes. All of them were high government officials, are in business circles of the corrupt fascist regime of Ian Smith in Rhodesia. 10 of them, in the next 4 hours, that survived were shot to death by a people's firing squad of the Patriotic Front, Zimbabwean Patriotic Front of Robert Mugabe, Marxist-Leninist, and Joshua Nkoma, nationalist. More arrests are being made in Nicaragua in an attempt to bring down Somoza. All world opinion, both capitalists and socialists, do not see how Somoza can hold on more than a few weeks at best. It has already been circulated by the bank president that his wealth is out of the country. Annual trade union conference in England. Trade union, free trade union movement, refused to be intimidated by the English government and have demanded, if they were to hold their conference there and put their money into the English economy, that they get television coverage. And BBC has covered the demands of the trade union conference very well. And much of the comments of the trade union have been denunciations, denouncing U.S. imperialism and English and other NATO imperialists in Africa. Britain reserves of gold. English reserves of gold and foreign currency dropped last month by $13 million. Reserves were well above the figure of a year ago, and they dropped suddenly till they're now lower than they've ever been. The world today, many world economies are in recession next to depression of 1929, except for those who are dealing in the currency in arms, particularly in the third world. Developing increase in economies are Morocco, buying a lot of arms, and they have a lot of oil. North Korea, increase in buying of arms and production of arms to protect themselves and other third world nations, and their economy is also in good standing. Ethiopia's economy has doubled, buying arms from the Soviet Union, and in return giving their harvest, as North Korea has, to China and the Soviet Union for supplying them with arms. F-15 aircraft, F-18 aircraft, tanks of all varieties are being sent into the Soviet Union. Air-to-plane missile, ground-to-air missiles also now, as the Soviet Union is getting tired of the Somalian tricks backed by U.S. imperialists. Tanks are shelling. The tanks of the most sophisticated nature are being sold to Iran, the Shah of Iran. Arms sold without any restriction whatsoever. Is that sane, says BBC? BBC charges that the 1979 scenario of the world collapse could likely come to pass because they feel that the Shah is close to having his fingers on nuclear weapons. Not restricted at all as what is sold to the Shah because U.S. needs his oil and needs his riches. Who are the worst countries selling weapons? According to Radio Sweden, Social Democracy, USA is the worst imperialist power. Its economy is nearly kept alive by selling arms after stealing the materials to make those arms from such continents as Africa and third world nations in Southeast Asia. Next comes Britain, and then following France. Only then comes the Soviet Union, out of necessity. It is purely economic, no, political, for capitalist nations, says the BBC. They have to do so, but we know what it is. It is nothing but economics. There has to be so much turnover. There has to be constant turnover. The planned obsolescence, things to wear out quickly, so people will have to buy them more quickly and more readily. What else is used up more quickly than guns? And at the same time, soldiers' lives are killed, so they won't have to give it on any employment considerations for the poor. But in the USSR, it serves no purpose. It is actually a drain on the economy. Even BBC admitted this. The Soviet Union does not set up its economy based on war. As shown in Angola, it was a great drain on them. Cuba also was an expensive economic drain, as they now pour $3 million a day in maintaining the high standard of living that the Cubans enjoy. U.S. gives arms to Israel, who gets everything almost free because of the influence of Zionism in USA. U.S. gives $1.5 billion every year of our tax money. Now that's $1,500 million per year free of our tax money for armaments, sophisticated sufficiently that now they have nuclear weapons, at least U.S. tactical nuclear weapons. U.S. is selling the F-15 missile to Saudi Arabia by the demand of the Arab League because they are going to cut off oil unless U.S. does. Thus, this increases the likelihood of nuclear war also. United States is the biggest supplier of arms around the world, said BBC. Backup of personnel that they buy the weapons from in many countries are in the third world, that they're trying to get third world nations soldiers, particularly those of lighter skin, to do their fighting, but they're not having very much success. They spend as much on weapons as health and education in the United States on the third world nations. They give them, in fact, very little help at all. BBC's report says they spend as much. Voice of Netherlands says that 90% of all aid U.S. gives is of a military nature, no matter what kind of deprivation a country may be facing. Like India now, is just being flooded till it looks like a million are going to die in the monsoon rains. Increase in spending power is a function of the rise in the oil prices, says the BBC. Major arms exporting countries, there is an economic case against arms expenditures. According to some capitalists, third world countries spend less than 0.5% of their gross national product. In other words, a half penny of a dollar on weapons. Countries want security, whether internal or external. Major countries spend from 10% up to 80%, which includes USA. While our cities suffer with rot, while our people do not have medical care, USA puts 80% of every tax dollar. That's how much guilt you should feel this morning and all day long. To People's Rally tonight, when we have our test at 7:30 promptly, remember, every time we used a telephone, every time we got a taxi, every time we went in the bus, every time we bought a car, piece of clothing, television, went to a movie, ate anything out of a supermarket, bought anything, took wages, 80% of that tax was going to kill our black brothers, our brown brothers and sisters across the world. McNamara, president of the World Bank, says countries are too much dependent upon arms race and not enough on development. He said it's going to end up in catastrophe. Still, third world countries are spending a great deal now on weapons this year. It's hard to define offensive as opposed to defensive weapons. 1973, Egyptians were heavily armed. International control to try to establish some kind of a way of increasing national interest in subduing the arms race. U.S. session on disarmament is hypocritical because U.S. never tries to educate its own nations against the armed race. It's always trying to encourage some nation that's non-aligned or pro-Soviet. The World Health Organization spent in 10 years what it costs for one new bomber by USA. Just one new bomber. And they make that bomber in less than a day. And it's only, that bomber is only one ten-thousandth of the entire military cost for a six-month period. Yet the World Health Organization, in trying to combat hunger and disease for 10 years, has spent out the nations, the rich nations of capitalism, has only given her enough money, who that is, World Health Organization, the price of one new bomber is all the money they've had for 10 years. BBC comment. Only way to make change is for people to realize that amount expended for armaments compared for how much is needed for people to survive and live well. That if people in the third world, if they continue to be hungry, they're going to cause a war because they will march on the affluent nations rather than starve. How much money will be allocated to improve social conditions will determine how much longer U.S. capitalism and British capitalism survive, said BBC. Voice of America. Developing countries are stabilizing their economies and hopefully, says Voice of America, they'll be able to do so with other nations. Rhodesian plane crashes, I just told you. 18 survivors, nationalist guerrillas, arrived and held a people's court. It was a nationalist element of the Zimbabwean Patriotic Front under Joshua Nkoma. He said they were all criminals. They were in the army and in big business and in government. He said they were all killed, so they were shot 4 hours later by firing squad. Guerrillas came on the scene and opened fire, as I said, immediately when they were fired upon by the survivors first. President Carter awaiting the arrival of Egyptian delegation at Camp David, where his chances for political future will rise or fall. Most encouraging factor, says Carter, is that Egypt is really interested in success. A secret meeting, as you know, was held between Eon Smith and Joshua in Nakoma. However, President Nair, a very close friend who's been to Guyana many times, a very close friend to our Prime Minister, Forbes Burnham, said that this was a wrong thing to do. It only gave capitalism stronger, that Joshua in Nakoma should not have met with Smith. Anyway, it showed that Smith was only interested in driving a wedge between Nakoma and Mugabe. However, Joshua in Nakoma criticized President Nair for making the statement. President Nair is a very brave president of Marxist Tanzania. He said that he would give no refugee asylum to Nakoma or any of his allies unless in the future that he negotiated every point, hand in glove, side by side with Robert Mugabe, Marxist-Leninist leader of the Patriotic Front. Nair said that no nationalist can be fully depended upon. He said the only people that will bring change of permanent nature to the people are international Marxist-Leninists. That's the strongest Nair has ever been, and he receives International Monetary Fund aid, and so do Romania, as far as that goes. Romania receives International Monetary Fund aid. Several countries do, but they have not been able to buy their pride are to impose upon their willingness to stand for socialism, live socialism, and speak socialism. Vice President Mondale went to see new Pope John the Fourth, sitting on his seat, enthroned, I guess. They presented to him his favorite writer's book, Life on the Mississippi. I mean, his favorite writer is Mark Twain, and Vice President Mondale, who led the U.S. delegation, gave Pope John the Fourth Life on the Mississippi. I think it'd be good for us if he likes Mark Twain and says the Pope's favorite author is Mark Twain, that we should send him letters from the earth that makes fun of the Bible and God. Maybe we might convert the Pope. Let's think to do that here and see that that little paperback gets to Pope John, as he said to all the world that Mark Twain was his favorite writer. Well, Mark Twain made fun of the Bible, showed that there could not be any God, showed all the lies in the Bible in letters from the earth. Of course, Vice President Mondale would not give him that book. It's a funny, it's comedy. And the Pope, if he likes Mark Twain, should know what Mark Twain stood for. He hated religion, the Bible, and God. USA has to cut inflation and go back to the prices as they were in the early 1960s, said IMF and World Bank. If the U.S. is to stabilize the dollar and stave off a depression, if they will do this, they will then curb inflation. Then the rest of the world can follow suit and thereby straighten out their monetary systems. However, most world economists say this is dreamy nonsense, dreamy-headed nonsense, that nothing will be able to stave off an inevitable economic crisis, a depression, or a nuclear war. Croatian nationalists take over Yugoslavian embassy and another government building in the capital of Australia, demanding the separation of Croatia in an independent socialist government that would be pro-Soviet. New South Wales, there is a general strike in Australia. Train services are all struck in sympathy for the Croatians. There's a great deal of socialist feeling in Australia. Buses are on strike in Melbourne and in several other cities. Australia and New Zealand sees unemployment as increasing and nothing can be done about it. They blame USA and her monopoly capitalist practices of trying to rake off the highest profits for herself as a major nation responsible for the depression that's coming on the world. Australia asked to back their foreign investments now. No one will trust the Australian dollar. Australia is slipping behind all other nations technologically, said Radio Australia, that you get through the Melbourne station. Continue with the news. Carter explains the weak dollar. President Carter said yesterday that imports of manufactured goods that U.S. citizens have to have, and not imports of oil, have worsened the nation's trade deficit and eroded the dollar. In fact, Carter said oil imports have decreased, but our inflation goes up and up because U.S. populace depend upon too many foreign-made items. Unless the U.S. populace is willing to change, and he felt that was unlikely, the shift will continue until there's a major economic recession. That's Carter's word for what will really be a depression. The statement made in an interview with foreign correspondents marked a significant shift in U.S. strategy on the eve of Carter's departure for an economic summit conference and an economic peace settlement with, you know, Egypt and Israel. Continuing with the news, we'll see if there's anything that's worth your while that you might want to see or hear. There's a lot in the news. You don't really have to give that much sometimes for you to get the full covering of the day. It is important that you do know what is happening in the world. It's important now to remember we must know, rush to judgment, we know, not rush to judgment, but Mark Lane should be familiar to us, as he will be visiting soon, so will Charles Gary, so you ought to read something of him as a street fighter in the courtroom, his book, and be sure you know the sermon of Mark Fried, Dr. Fried, who is right now, tomorrow, this day rather, going to be holding an important press conference on our behalf. The Soviet Union are in the lead as peace race nears in. Prague, Warsaw peace cycle race, is in its final stages as we went to press yesterday, said Guyana Chronicle, was clearly destined to prove a triumph for the Soviet bicyclist. Within 2 days to go, they were leading in both individual and team contests. By the way, we have an interesting sport film in Technicolor from Cuba. They are so good in every area of sports, which means that they can contend peacefully in the sports arena for socialism, that some of our sports fans here would see how socialists handle that and use it effectively. It's important to the body, too, and it can be used that way. The World Health Organization is drawing the attention of governments and the world public this year to the problem of hypertension, high blood pressure, particularly noted to be the highest in the United States of America. At least a tenth of the world's population suffer from it. It's closer to 30% in the United States. It causes complications which lead to at least half the deaths from heart disease, and every third person who has lost his or her capacity for work is suffering from high blood pressure, and it's due mostly to overeating and being overweight. So we're counting on you to do something about that. 30 or 40 years ago, more than 60% of the cases of heart failure proved fatal within 2 months of their onset in the Soviet Union. Today in the Soviet Union, 4.5 patients out of 5 recover and return to active work due to the scientific and medical breakthroughs of Soviet medicine. Practical preventative and research work in this field is coordinated by the All-Union Cardiological Research Center, Moscow, founded 2 years ago, and particularly by its Department of Preventative Medicine, where teams go through every city, village, and countryside. For no matter how much we improve treatment, the Soviet Union says, the main thing is to prevent the disease as early as possible. You know, in USA, that children are now dying at 12 and 13 years of age due to poor diet from heart attacks. Let us continue with the news. In the 60 years of Soviet government, the productivity of labor has grown at an unprecedented rate. It is now 47 times what it was before the revolution. And in the 7 years, 1971 through 77, resulted in as much output as could have been produced by an extra 12 million or more workers. That's how much each worker produces in the USSR. Rising productivity. Remember now, however, we have to move fast. We give our answers to our test as we go through to our meal and we go back to the end of the line. Rising productivity accounts for 4/5 of the increase in Soviet industrial output. In 1913, the Russian worker was producing barely a tenth as much as the average American and a fifth of the British worker's output. By 1976, however, the Soviet worker had not only caught up and passed the USA and Britain and all European countries, it was nearly twice ahead of the average U.S. citizen in productivity. That gap was narrowed completely by the end of 1976. Productivity in the USSR has grown over 617 times, but in the United States, since in the same period of 1951 to 76, the productivity of the worker has only increased 2.4 times. Can you imagine that? 600 times as opposed to only 3 times? Anyone with the right mind would know that socialism is superior. In many Soviet enterprises, labor productivity is today higher than in any American ones, even the most sophisticated. For the future, we plan an average rise in Radio Moscow of 30% of production every year. During the current 1976-80 to 1980 five-year plan, 9/10 of the planned growth of industrial output is already obtained, the higher productivity that is, already here in 1978. They've done 90% of the five-year plan goal. That is amazing. What an amazing people. What a united people. What a people in solidarity. It shows, Radio Moscow reveals the number of spinning wheels that they're making these days so that seniors have something they can do to provide beauty to the culture. The case of Yuri Orlov. Yuri Orlov has been called the great human rights case in United States. Carter has been screaming about Yuri Orlov, Y-U-R-Y-O-R-L-O-V. He was sentenced in Moscow merely because of his views and his ideas about human rights. That quote is typical of the reports of last week's trial in the Western capitalist press and radio. But that's not the truth. Orlov was in fact charged with specific criminal acts, not because of any anti-Soviet views. Orlov is described by the West as a physicist. He had indeed worked as a physicist until 1974, when he resigned his job to take up more lucrative. Lucrative mean more much, where he could make much more money, more lucrative employment. Evidence before the court, evidence not refuted even, once not denied by Orlov, showed that from 1974, he devoted himself to the profession of supplying information to the Western press, radio, and CIA. Communications between Orlov and Radio Liberty, a fascist radio propaganda device of the U.S. and her imperialist lackeys, and the NATO psychological warfare centers, which were confiscated, were produced in evidence. And independent observers were called from Sweden and Finland and other nations. All agreed that Orlov was a spy. They showed that the falsifications and slanders he practiced were not only the result of his desire to impress his customers, but had the clear specific aim of compromising the Soviet socialist system in the eyes of the capitalist public and undermining its prestige. Documents and evidence from witnesses exposed the methods he adopted. Fictitious names were entered into lists of sufferers for conscience. Facts were distorted and brazen lies were told. For example, in August 1976, he floated a story that the Supreme Court of Latvia had given prison sentences to 4 dockers who took part in a 5-day strike in protest against fish-only days at the local canteen. In fact, they were no fish-only days and no strike, and the 4 men whose names he had given had never worked in the port of Riga in the first place, nor had criminal proceedings ever been taken against any of them. Another completely false story, a lie to the effect that Jews living in the village of Ilyinka and in the Voronezh region were being deliberately isolated from the outside world was used enthusiastically by U.S. and her Western imperialist correspondents. Viktor Tarasov, chairman of Ilyinka's Rossiya Collective Farm told the court that Ilyinka was a modern village with a school, a club, shops, medical, and other services. Jews living there freely conducted their religious services in their own synagogue. It was ridiculous to talk about isolation. But Western imperialism will do anything, said Radio Moscow, to get the world's eyes off of their own crimes against their minorities and the genocide, the extermination that they have planned for all people of color. As a result of Orlov's inventions, some Ilyinka villagers received invitations from abroad to reunite with non-existent relatives. The farmers wrote to the Israeli Foreign Ministry protesting against these activities. Orlov frequently produced documents alleging psychiatric repression for political beliefs. Nonsense. These lies, too, were inventions, as psychiatrists confirmed, from Finland and from Sweden. Neutral sources. Orlov also invented stories about living conditions and food at corrective labor colonies. Witnesses from the collective camps of rehabilitation, as the Soviets called them, in question confirmed that these reports had no basis in fact, that conditions were normal. This was attested by the United Nations Select Committee of Non-Aligned Nations. Forced to admit the distortions and lies, exaggerations and inventions in his writings, Orlov tried to defend his right to make mistakes, claiming that they were not scientific works but journalism. Asked whether he had verified his facts before sending his articles abroad, he said he had unqualified trust in the civil rights champions who were his sources. He was questioned closely on his report about abuse of psychiatry, and it quickly became clear that he knew nothing at all about psychiatry. However, he did give particular secrets about Soviet breakthroughs in paranormal. That's what I have, the gifts. And the Soviets are interested in studying this facet. They don't have an individual with the power that I can show and represent by healing the sick or raising the dead or correcting a crippled body. And we need to show a great deal of gratitude for those things. We see it happen every day. But anyway, he was getting into that sensitive area and giving documentation, secret state information, to the CIA. Nothing that vitally affected their work, but he was trying to. How then, he was asked, was he able to write about it with such confidence in the foreign press, if indeed it was just a clear, acceptable exchange of ideas? His only answer was that acquaintances in the medical profession shared his views. Evidence brought forward included documents produced by Orlov, the spy for USA, which he disseminated, spread through the anti-Soviet publications of the West, among them Poishev, published by the notorious organization of fascists known as NTS. NTS, the People's Labor Alliance, was set up by the white Russian fascist immigrants in the early 1930s and later joined by immigrants who made their way to the West during the Second World War and went through China, causing China to this day to have a real hurt and prejudice against Russia because they really raped Russia. They were so bigoted. The first program of the NTS specifically said that its aims were the overthrow of the communist regime. The white Russians went through China, and that's what caused China, I should say, to hate Russia, because they can't yet separate their mind, those white Russian fascists who were fleeing Stalin and the communist revolution, from white Russians in general. As I said, the first program of the NTS, the fascist organization, specifically said that its aims were the overthrow of communist and socialist regimes and the establishment of capitalist private property system. Poishev has even boasted of the links between the NTS and the treacherous General Vlasov Army, which fought on the side of Hitler's Nazis during the Soviet people, against the Soviet people, which killed 22 million people in Soviet Russia during the war. The NTS, based in Western Europe, works closely with and is financed by CIA and all other Western capitalist intelligence agencies. Thus, that much for the so-called human rights case of Yuri Orlov, CIA agent and traitor to the Soviet people. It's good to get the proper slant on things. Unfortunately, we really don't ever get the truth, it doesn't seem. We don't get the truth as we should. Italy has not yet overcome the shock of the abduction and assassination of Aldo Moro, widely seen as a challenge to all Italy's Republican and Democratic institutions. Italy has stood firm, although at a great price, the life of an outstanding political and government leader, said Sweden, giving you another point of view. By giving a vote of confidence on May 17 to the Andreotti government and its so-called anti-terrorist decree, the Italian Parliament demonstrates its determination to thwart the plans of terrorism. At the same time, Aldo Moro's kidnap and abduction and assassination drew attention to the shortcomings and flaws in the work of the government machine. This fact is now being used by the forces longing for a strong arm and firm order. The right-wing Italian newspaper Tempo, for instance, has called for a return to the times when the Christian Democratic Party was strong. Italy was where Italy was quiet and there was law and order. Is that what Aldo Moro's killers want? Doesn't this mean a return to dictatorship and a rabid anti-communist policy? For the terrorist, action was primarily aimed at disrupting the parliamentary majority, which includes the communists and which was supported by Moro. That parliamentary majority has weathered the storm, and a few days ago, about 4 million Italians who went to the polls at the partial administrative elections once again confirmed their confidence in the Democratic parties and the Communist parties included. It did not work out to be an act of terrorism, even so, says Radio Sweden. The right-wing extremists hope to gain from the death of Aldo Moro and may have even funded it, but they lost a substantial number of votes, and the left was not hurt in Italy as a socialist was elected in the place of Aldo Moro. Thus ends news for today. Be sure you study the last tape at last people's rally. Be sure you study it very carefully. That would be last Tuesday's. And know the film Harlan County. If you have to take it in the afternoon, be prepared for test at 7:30 definitely. All my love, work as hard as we can to free our people, because we're up against a enemy that goes for the jugular. It's a miracle we've survived, that none have died, that none have been killed, no accidents, and none have been shot, except one who would not mind my business, would not stay where he had safety, and insisted on going back when told by prophecy that what would happen to him. Keep the truth, follow the teachings, listen to your office about safety measures. Be very, very cautious about all safety measures during this cycle. Much love. I say it often, but I cannot tell you enough how much you are my life and my loves. Have a good day.